Welcome to the podcast that helps you build wealth and thrive in a world of out-of-control central banks and big governments. This is the Rebel Capitalist Show.
Hello, fellow rebel capitalists. Hope you are well. Welcome to this evening's live stream. Super stoked to get into the questions. Before we do, let's check out two new speakers that we've got for Rebel Capitalists Live. So my good buddy, Doug Casey, just talked to him last week, and he is ready to go for Miami, June 24th through the 26th. So as of right now, I've got Doug Casey, Dr. Chris Martinson, Jason Hartman, Mark Moss, Brent Johnson, Lynette Zhang, Ken McElroy, and as of last week, another good buddy of mine, Steve Van Meter, and the MC is going to be none other than Robert Helms himself from The Real Estate Guys. So you got to check this out. As soon as we get done with the live stream this evening, guys, go to rebelcapitalistlive.com and get your tickets. While they're still super cheap, they kind of bump up in price as we get closer to the event. So check that out this evening at rebelcapitalistlive.com. Okay, into your questions. Let's see what we've got here. Is it possible to have a local city leader to create laws that make banking illegal in your town? I have no idea. I don't. Why would you want to make banking illegal? Yeah, I don't know that banking in and of itself is a bad thing. It's banking when you get the state or the government involved. That's when it's a bad thing, because then, you know, banking in a decentralized fashion is very good. It helps the economy grow. It produces the amount of money the economy actually needs to grow in a healthy way with deflation. It's a misnomer to believe the money supply shouldn't grow. The money supply should grow with the economy, but it should be done in a way that's driven by the free market. And if that's the case, like we saw in the 1800s, you would have real economic growth while you have deflation. And, you know, people think that if you have the only way to have proper deflation is if you have a fixed money supply. That's not true. In fact, a fixed money supply is not ideal. You just don't want the government getting involved with creating the additional money supply. You want to leave that up to the private sector and a decentralized banking system where they actually have to keep the loans they make on their books. So they're incentivized to give loans, i.e. create money, dollars, let's say, for productive uses, not consumption, but for productivity, increasing the supply of goods and services. This is a system that is called free banking. So I don't want to go too far off the deep end here, but banking in and of itself is not a bad thing. It's when it's centralized and you get the government involved, then you get the huge corporations, the banksters that are in bed with the politicians, that are in bed with Wall Street, that are in bed with Goldman Sachs. And you have this revolving door at Goldman Sachs where they just go, you know, from CEO over to the Treasury, back to Goldman Sachs. And it's just completely incestuous. And that's when it's more like corporatism or even fascism. But that's when banking is centralized. When it's decentralized, it's a good thing. That's what we want. So, but to answer your question directly, I have no idea how you could meet with local leaders to create laws that would make it illegal. I don't know why you'd want that. So, okay. Do you honestly believe the Russians are smart enough to create missiles superior to our own? Well, it's not me saying this. It's not my opinion. Just look it up. They've got, even our military strategists will admit that Russians have missiles that are more advanced than the technology we have here in the United States. So don't take my word on it. Question, how do you think we will see food shortages in the United States? How soon do you think we'll see food shortages? Well, I mean, to a certain degree, we've already seen food shortages, right? I mean, I was in the United States maybe 2 months ago, and I remember going over right across the street to the Whole Foods, and 10, 15% of the shelf space was completely barren, kind of a shortage, right? So Now, when will it get really, really bad to where I think you're going to see people waiting in line? Actually, food rationing. That's probably, and I think it could come to that, where everything is completely centralized and the government tells you how much food you can buy for the month, how much meat you can eat and all of these things. We've even seen this technology come out, and this company that's kind of in bed with the World Economic Forum, where they issue a debit card and it tallies up your transactions for the month and gives you kind of basically a social score, or it's a carbon score. And if you exceed your carbon allocation for the month, then they cut you off. So you can't buy any more gas. You can't buy any more beef or something along these lines, because the carbon footprint on either of those is just too extreme. So exceeds your allotment for the month. I think that will be proposed probably within the next couple of years. I mean, will it stick? I don't know. We'll have to see. It just depends on how bananas things get. But I think you'll start to hear more and more and more about it. I think it'll be like the central bank digital currency was in 2019. Like when I first started talking about that on my YouTube channel, everyone thought I was crazy. And everyone thought I was a conspiracy theorist. But now it's just kind of, everyone knows that's kind of what's coming. You even hear it in the mainstream media. Now, but yet we don't have it yet. So I think that the food rationing will probably take the same path. So I'd say, you know, a couple of years, we're going to really, really, really start hearing about it. And people are going to argue that we have to do it to avoid climate change or climate catastrophe. And if we don't do this now, that, you know, the human race is going to be eradicated by 2050 and, you know, yada, yada, yada. So I think that's going to be the push. Now, there's a lot of variables in there, but we'll have to see how it plays out. But bottom line is I think you're going to hear more and more and more about this. Now, as far as probably more pertaining to your point with the food shortages as a result of a lack of fertilizer, among other things, and energy coming from Russia, and Belarus is another one that's a big supplier of potash. Canada, I think, is the largest supplier. But if you take 35 or 40% offline between Belarus and Russia, you've got big problems, like really big problems. And that's what could lead to the food shortages and therefore rationing. And I think what's going to happen is they'll probably try to do price controls on top of that, which will just make it far, far worse. And it'll be, my concern is that it'll be like the gas lines we saw in the 1970s, but with food. I think that's kind of the direction we're headed here. If this, you know, the invasion continues, or this Russia-Ukraine deal continues into 2023. You know, a lot of people say that, oh, well, Putin's losing. Maybe. I mean, it depends on what his objectives are. If Putin's objectives are to de-dollarize the world or start that process, get that in motion, can you honestly say he's losing? I mean, look what Saudi Arabia is doing with the yuan. Look at what India is doing. Look at the deals that Russia is doing with China as far as settling payments outside of the dollar. I'm not saying that's his objective, but if it is, I don't know that he's losing. And another thing, you know, that I'm highly skeptical with the mainstream media is how they always say that, you know, he went in there thinking that this was just going to be like a 3-day operation. And, you know, he was just shocked. And now he's just scrambling around, just kind of flying by the seat of his pants. Maybe, but there again, look at what's happening to the West. Biden himself came out the other day and stated that, yeah, we're going to have food shortages. And when we apply sanctions, it doesn't just hurt the Russian people. It hurts the West, including the United States. So then the question becomes, whose economy can survive longest? You know, one thing that I'd encourage everyone to do is go to YouTube and watch some of these vlogs. This one is a vlog that from Russia that I find very helpful, just because you hear everything in the media And then when you watch these vlogs, it's kind of like an insider secret. I don't know of anyone else in the macro space that does this, but it's really helpful because you hear all this stuff in the media, and then you go and look at kind of the boots on the ground intel from Russians that are vlogging, you know, going to the grocery store, going to the mall, and showing you how the sanctions are impacting everyday life. This is one guy, really, really nice guy, and his wife too. They just had a newborn kid here. But his YouTube channel is Dan Shikos, I think is how you pronounce that. But just as an example, you know, I watched this vlog today that he did on, he just went to the local mall and just kind of walked around, which is exactly what I would do if I was there, just trying to check things out, get a grasp for how the sanctions were impacting kind of the Russian economy there. And just to see and to show you the stores that were open and then the stores that were not open. Because when you hear it in the mainstream media, and I was doing a video on this the other day on the Rebel Capitalist show, like Kevin Leary or Kevin O'Leary, whatever his name is, he was sitting there talking about how all these corporations backing out of Russia is just devastating. And the people aren't even going to be able to survive. It's going to be like living in the, you know, as a medieval serf or something like that. And they're just going to have all these uprisings against the government, and they're going to assassinate Putin because, and I'm not even kidding you, the example, one of the main examples he used is that Disney and Netflix isn't in Russia anymore. Therefore, they're not going to have access to any Disney cartoons. I'm not kidding you. That was his rationale as to why Russia will, or the Russians will just you know, revolt and have some sort of coup against Putin. Because I mean, what are they going to? They don't have any more cartoons. What could they? What are they going to possibly do? This was honestly the level of thinking that we're dealing with right now with the mainstream financial media. I mean, absolutely unbelievable. But going back to Dan in this vlog that he did in the mall, you know, you hear in the media that, again, just what Kevin O'Leary was saying, that this is just devastating them. And what are they going to do? McDonald's is backing out of the country. And oh my gosh, they don't have Starbucks. And, you know, they're not going to have any goods and services, for heaven's sakes, because we know that Russia's consumer economy is completely driven by U.S. corporations, right? Being sarcastic there. So what happens is he just does a walk through the mall, and you can see that it's like a normal, just your everyday mall that you'd have in the United States, probably, you know, like three or four anchor stores and all these, you know, the food court, you guys know what I'm talking about. And out of the probably 50, maybe more, 70 stores that were in this mall, like five or six of them were closed. And so as an example, you had all of these clothing stores that were, I'm assuming, Chinese and Russian brands. They were, of course, all open and all. And then like one out of 10 stores was closed, and it would be like Levi's. But then right next to it, there'd be like five other jean stores or denim stores from companies that weren't from the United States. And then like Adidas would be closed, and then right next to it, there'd be another, I don't know if there are shoe stores next to it, but you know, there's plenty of shoe stores. And so what it dawns on you that the only thing these sanctions are doing is hurting shareholders for these companies, and which is a lot of blue collar workers in the United States, because they own these companies through their pension funds. And then what they're doing is they're just shooting themselves in the foot long term, because it's not like there was no one in the mall. The people are still there in the mall buying stuff. So what are they going to do? Levi's is closed, so they're not going to get their jeans there. They're just going to go over to this other company, and the Russian companies are going to take market share. That's all I think is going to happen. So you see this difference between what you hear in the mainstream media and what is really happening boots on the ground. And then you can come to your own conclusions as to the impact these sanctions will or will not have. So anyway, kind of an insider tip right there. Hey guys, I want to remind you to check out Rebel Capitalist Pro. This is the incredible online investment forum that I have with investment experts Lynn Alden and Chris McIntosh. It includes professionals such as Patrick Serezna from Macro Voices. He specializes in options. Tony Greer, commodity trading. Jason Hartman, real estate. And Brent Johnson with macroeconomics. If you want to build wealth and thrive in this world of out-of-control central banks and big governments, Rebel Capitalist Pro is the resource you need. So check it out today at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. We'll see you inside with the fellow Rebel Capitalists that are taking their investing to the next level. Hunter Biden's laptop from hell. Yeah, see, this is, I don't know if this is a question, but this is another thing that is just, remember 6 months ago, remember this was disinformation. In fact, you would have been booted off of Twitter if you would have said anything about this. And now all of a sudden, according to the New York Times and the New York Post, this is true. And it's just, how many times do we need to see this happen, what they label disinformation, to be truth 6 months later before we start to just assume that anything that is labeled dis or misinformation is truth to begin with? I mean, they're batting 1,000, right? I don't know. In fact, I mean, you guys can tell me in the comments, try to list one thing that they've said is quote unquote disinformation, like a big, you know, topic in the news that turns out to actually be disinformation. I mean, just one thing. Go all the way back to the Cervasa sickness. It's like every single main, I'm sure there's things here and there, but I'm talking about major topics. It's like every single one turns out to be true 6 months later. It's just, but yet there's people that still hang on their every word as though it's accurate. And they're just doing a fantastic job and they just make a mistake every once in a while. And they apologize for the media. They just make excuses for them instead of just opening their eyes and just acknowledging the fact that they're being lied to, for heaven's sakes. The disinformation and misinformation is just a tool. It's a tactic the media uses to try to hide the truth. And then what happens is people, like in the alternative media space, they just keep talking about it more and more and more and more and more until the mainstream media just can't sweep it under the rug anymore and they have to acknowledge it. I mean, that's pretty much the cycle we've seen since March of 2020. And it's just, it's staggering that people don't look at the mainstream media through a lens of complete skepticism right now. What is your preferred business structure? Oh, LLC is fine. I mean, it depends what you're doing, but just for like a normal startup business, just LLC is fine. What are your thoughts on elastic money supply, inelastic money supply? Does inelastic money supply hinder future economic growth? Yeah, it does. It does. So this, I kind of addressed this in an earlier question, but you want something in the middle. I think the best approach there, and I think a lot of people would agree, is just in the space, is free banking, just decentralized. It's there's no central bank, there's no government involvement. Let the banks live and die by how well they set up their balance sheet, and you know, the owners of the bank, they're all in, and they have to keep those loans on their books, and they issue the IOUs. And, you know, they're going to, it's just free market capitalism. It works in everything else. Why wouldn't it work in banking? It's just, we don't have that in banking, not by a long shot. And I mean, when you've got a central bank that's creating the price of money, and money is one half of every single transaction, how can you call that market interest rates? Or how can we have a price discovery? We can't. There's no way. So just get the government out of banking and let them create the money supply based on the demand for productive loans. That's what it's all about. And think about it. If you owned a bank and you had 100% of your net worth in the bank and you couldn't sell the loans that you generated to Fannie and Freddie, as an example, would you lend to people that were just going to consume? Of course not. You would lend to businesses that were going to create a revenue stream that was capable of paying you back with interest, right? Would you issue a loan? Let's say the CPI is an actual accurate reflection of inflation, and the CPI is at 7.9%. Would you issue a loan at 4%, 5%? Of course not. Of course not. You would issue a loan at 13, 14, 15%. And then what would happen to the rate of inflation? You know, we'd have positive real rates in the real economy because that's the rate of inflation. And these banks want to be paid back with more purchasing power. So what's happened is we've gotten so acclimated to the central planners creating the, I'm not going to say they're creating the money supply because it's still the commercial banks for the most part, usually. But it's them manipulating that interest rate at the front end of the curve. And that just does so much damage. And then also too with Fannie and Freddie, with them backstopping them, the central planners, when they're backstopping all the loans, buying all the debt from these banks, so these banks don't keep the debt on their books. That's another big, big problem. So now, as an example, Wells Fargo can issue a mortgage at 5% because they just flip that loan and they just act as a middleman and take a fee. And they don't care if that's a negative 3 or 4% interest rate. Who cares? You see, that's really the solution here. People get caught up. And it's the, you know, the problem is that the money supply can expand. That's where they get like super focused, and like the Bitcoin maximalists and the gold bugs and whatnot. But that's not really the problem. The problem is the centralization. And then I know the Bitcoin people would say, well, Bitcoin fixes that. Well, kind of, because then you get with Bitcoin, you might run into the other problem, which is the money supply being too inelastic to where it can't grow fast enough, and then you're actually hampering, especially global economic growth. And so, yes, you said that Snyder argues for an elastic money supply. I definitely agree with him. And, you know, there's a lot of people out there that are in the Bitcoin space that agree with Snyder. You know, first and foremost would be my friend Robert Breedlove. He's had Snyder on. Great series, by the way. It's a must listen. But that's really the conclusion that Robert, I think, came to in his own mind, is that, you know, kind of the best, there is no perfect system, let me be clear, but the best system that we have in an imperfect world of imperfect human beings, from my standpoint, is free banking. How soon do you think the Federal reverse course begins to lower rates again? Once they get to 2%, and I'm just doing that based off the 2-year treasury, because in the past, you go back, 40, 50 years, maybe even more than that. And they've pretty much followed the 2-year treasury. So I don't see why it would be any different this time. So the 2-year treasury is telling you that they're going to get up to, you know, 2.3% or something. So I think that's probably where they'll, or maybe 2%. Once they get there, I think that's kind of when things start to break. When you bought your house in the Midwest, did you get a mortgage? No, I didn't. You couldn't back then. I had like a 750 credit score, and I had a lot of money in the bank, and I couldn't get a mortgage. It's ironic that the banks, they will not lend when it's the best time to lend. They're just as guilty as we are, as you know, having recency bias. But no, I couldn't get a bank to lend me money. So I was just buying everything with cash. And then about a year or two later, maybe a year and a half, I forgot, is when I really set up a relationship with now a very good friend of mine, who is the VP of commercial lending at a local bank in Kansas City. And he extended lines of credit on all these houses that I bought in cash. So then I used the line of credit, and then if I wanted a long-term project, I could have termed out the LOC, the line of credit. Okay. Can I explain Lynn's position on Bond Chart of Truth? I'm not sure. I haven't seen that. I don't know what that is. So yeah, Kevin, I can't really. I'd maybe guess it's no. I don't want to venture a guess. If it's coming from Lynn, there's a 99.9% chance that I agree. Question: are you going to set up studio for streaming or continue your from your suite? I'll just probably continue from here. I was going to go back to the United States in April. That was kind of the game plan, and maybe even earlier. But now with everything that's happening in Russia and with the food supply, I'd rather be here than in the United States, honestly. Here, you're not going to have as much of an issue, if any issue at all, with the food supply. And you don't have 6,000 nuclear missiles pointed at you. So I'd prefer to be here until cooler heads prevail. So now to answer your question, I'll probably keep doing things here. I've got the good audio set up, so I know that's the most important thing. And then I've got the lighting and everything set up for the whiteboard. So for the Rebel Capitalist live streams, I'll probably just keep doing it from here and just kind of doing it on a temporary basis. And then when I get a place that's a little more permanent, whether it's here in the U.S. or who knows where the hell it'll be, set up a studio. Is the real estate bubble about to burst again? Well, I did a whiteboard video on this the other day, and pretty much the conclusion that I came to is, they can raise interest rates high enough to where it decreases demand enough to where, even though we're in very short supply, prices still go down in nominal terms. But the question is where, at what point? And again, if I had to venture a guess, I think the two-year treasury is telling you it's going to be around 2%. So I don't think the real estate bubble will burst until they raise rates high enough. And I think that line in the sand could be around 2%, just to reiterate. So that's kind of what I'm looking for. That's kind of my base case, if you will. Now, the real estate market can definitely go down in real terms, depending on what you think the real rate of inflation is in your area and what home prices did in your area. You know, you could have lost purchasing power last year, even though meaning that the price of your house would have gone down in real terms, depending on, again, where you live and the local rate of inflation and how high or how much the nominal price of homes increased. But so that isn't as predicated upon the Fed raising rates to break the stock market or the economy. Will gas stimmy make inflation rocket higher? Yeah, of course. Listen, you can't, these politicians are just, they have to know what they're doing will make things worse. They're not that stupid. So why are they doing it? What this tells you is that the politicians are basically acknowledging that they will do whatever it takes to get reelected, even if they know damn well it will make things worse. Any politicians that comes out, whether it's Trudeau, whether it's Newsom, whether it's Biden, whoever it is, and says, oh, well, we're going to solve the problem of inflation by giving you more money. That is them just announcing that they don't care about you. They don't care about the poor. They don't care about the middle class. They know damn well that what they're doing is going to make the economy far worse, and it's going to make people suffer even more, but they're more than willing to do it because they think that's the best opportunity they have to be reelected or to further their political career, usurp power control. Because they can't be stupid enough to think that a problem of consumer price inflation is a lack of money. The problem of consumer price inflation or the issue is a lack of supply. That's how you fix an inflation problem. You create additional supply. You don't create additional money or create additional currency, additional dollars. Said in the simplest terms, I can say it, a price inflation issue problem is not a result of too little money. It's a result of too little stuff. And it's a third grader knows that. And so, again, this is just the politicians telling you that They're happy to destroy the economy. They're happy to destroy the poor and middle class if it means they've got a slightly greater chance of being reelected. Of a percentage of your portfolio, what makes sense? if you got no debt to have in actual dollars outside the bank? Oh, I don't know. I can't really answer that question for you, Brian, because there's too many variables. I can just tell you that right now I'm keeping a little more cash than I normally would. Not necessarily outside the bank, but I'm just keeping a little more dry powder just because of the Fed hiking rates, you know, going into a hiking cycle, potentially reducing the size of their balance sheet, the inversion of the curve, the treasury curve at several maturities, and then the inversion in the Eurodollar future curve. I'm just, to me, that says that the probabilities are high that I should have a little more cash to potentially take advantage of a decrease in some asset prices that that I might want to buy in the future if those prices go down. What's my worldview of the perfect monetary system? That's a good question. I think you got to start by recognizing there is no perfect system and there never will be. Why? Again, we're humans. We're imperfect creatures in an imperfect world. So to think that we could create a perfect system, I think you're just kidding yourself, really. So understanding that we cannot create a perfect system, we've got to say, okay, what's the best of the worst? And or what's the least bad system we can create? And I don't know it would involve a reserve currency. I don't know that that's necessary. You know, people always say, oh, the dollar has to be the reserve currency because what's going to replace it? I don't know. Do we need a reserve currency? Like, why? It doesn't seem to me like we really need one. I mean, back in Bretton Woods, you can say, oh, yeah, we have to have one because it's got to be backed by gold and yada, yada, yada. But now that we live in this fiat monetary system, I mean, I don't know. I don't really know why we need one. So it would make sense to me that Saudi Arabia would sell its oil for whatever the country had that wants to buy it, be it rubles, yuan, dollars, yen. But then what they would probably want to do is that would be more transactional. And then they would take those yen, rubles, yuan, dollars, and then they would want to buy something that was a reserve asset. Gold makes sense. So it's not that they're really, you know, it's not that the currency is backed by gold. It's just that's the reserve asset these sovereigns and central banks are choosing to use. So, I mean, just think about that. Let's just say that you own an oil company in Saudi Arabia, and you've got three clients. You've got one in Japan, you've got one in the United States, and you've got one in China. And so you're going to sell your barrel of oil. Okay, what's the going rate in dollars? Okay, you owe me $100 or whatever. And okay, you're selling another barrel of oil to Japan. Okay, what's the going rate based on the yen? Okay, that's 200 yen or whatever. And then in yuan, that's 500 yuan. Okay, great. And so they're going to get you that money. You know, hopefully we have a better system to where we can get it quickly with correspondent banking and whatnot. Or, you know, maybe the XRP system. I forgot what it's not XRP, but they're it's been a couple months since I studied it. But not XRP itself, but the XRP platform, let's just call it that. I forgot what it's called. But maybe it's something like that to where they can settle a lot faster, settle in real time. And then what do you do? So what would you do if you're that oil company and you just received $100, you received 200 yen, and you received 500 yuan for your three barrels of oil you just sold? Well, you just take that and just buy gold. And then you just hold the gold and store that. I don't know why that wouldn't be as... like, see, makes sense to me. And I mean, usually when currencies lose their reserve status, it's a slow, gradual process where it's just used to settle transactions less and less and less. Now, you could say, you know, from a lending standpoint, that would get interesting because if you're You know, if you're borrowing, what would you want to borrow? See, again, I think you could just borrow in your local currency, even if you had global customers. I'd have to think it through. But I don't know why that wouldn't work. And then you say, well, what about Bitcoin? Yeah, Bitcoin could do that, but it's right now it's too volatile. It's just so darn volatile. I don't think it would be a realistic solution right now. Now, it could be in 5 or 10 years. But right now, gold makes a lot of sense to me. And that just solves a lot of problems. You know, I really thought it through when I did that whiteboard video on what Luke was saying, Luke Groman. And this was maybe like a couple weeks ago. And it's just, if you're a country that is selling oil, you know, you're afraid that the dollars that you're getting, they're not going to have the same purchasing power in 2, 5, 10 years, and they're, or dollars or treasuries, you know, just long dated dollars. And so, you know, gold kind of solves that to when the country can do whatever they want with their currency and you don't care because you're not holding the currency. And that currency is just going to be devalued against your reserve asset, which is gold. And then if you're a country that is like China, where you're exporting a lot of stuff and your energy short, you don't have a lot of domestic energy. Therefore, you don't have to worry about your treasuries losing value to the oil that you're going to need to buy in the future. So it makes a lot of sense to me that that they would start to do that. It's just, why haven't they already? Because we had this system set up, the petrodollar, set up in 73 or 74 with Saudi Arabia. And we can see that gradually starting to fall apart. And that goes back to what I was saying at the beginning. You know, the mainstream media says, oh, Putin's getting his butt kicked. I don't know. Depends on what he's trying to do. If he's trying to kickstart the destruction of the petrodollar, maybe he's achieving that. I don't know. We'll have to see how it plays out. But let me be clear. I'm not saying that the dollar is going to lose its reserve status tomorrow or in 3 years or 5 years. It's going to take a long time. And because what's the counter? What's the flip side of that coin? It's the banksters, because the banksters have been making money on the dollar, the euro dollar system, since the 1950s. So you could have all the oil producers and countries and central banks wanting to do business in gold, and you've got to convince the banksters. That's going to be a tough sell. So who's got more power at the end of the day? The sovereigns, the central banks, or the banksters? I don't know. Hey guys, I want to remind you to get your tickets to Rebel Capitalist Live. This is the live conference I do twice per year with all of your favorite speakers from the Rebel Capitalist Show and experts in investing, commodities, real estate, freedom, and liberty. All of your favorite topics, all of your favorite speakers. The next Rebel Capitalist Live is going to be in Miami, and tickets increase in price as we get closer to the event. So go to rebelcapitalistlive.com right now to get your tickets to the next Rebel Capitalist Live. It's the conference you cannot afford to miss. It'll help you increase your financial freedom and, more importantly, your personal freedom. You'll get intel that you won't hear anywhere else. Past speakers have included icons in macroeconomics, investing, and personal freedom and liberty. People like Dr. Ron Paul, Robert Kiyosaki, Brent Johnson, Lynn Alden, Jeff Snyder, Richard Werner, Mark Moss, Lynette Zhang, and Robert Breedlove, just to name a few. So once again, go to Rebel Capitalist Live right now and get your tickets today. With extreme leverage levels, could fast rising rates speed up changes in the traditional slow-moving real estate market? Well, I don't know that it's slow-moving, is it? Are you talking about the decrease in prices being slow-moving? Like, last bubble we had, the prices peaked out in 2006, and it took them till 2012 to bottom out. So maybe that's what you're referring to. But as far as the real estate market in the United States is by no means slow moving. You sell a house in about 3 hours and you get multiple bids. So that's anything but slow moving. But I think I understand your point. So with extreme leverage levels, could fast rising rate? Well, nah. Most people would say no, because everyone has a, or most people have a 30-year fixed, but that's just looking at from a standpoint of an owner or a seller. You're not looking at it from the standpoint of a buyer. So if rates go up high enough, that's going to decrease demand to a point where it still takes a long time, Peter, because you got to put yourself in the position of a homeowner. You've got a 30-year fixed. You can afford your payments. You know that the comps are, let's say, $500,000. You know the market's going down, but you still want to hold off to get that $500,000 that you think your home is worth. You've got to not get any bites or any leads for like 6 months or a year till you finally realize that, hey, I'm gonna have to lower my price. And so that's why the real estate market takes so long to turn. Now, we could have a situation where unemployment skyrockets because the Fed raises rates, things break, stock market crashes, and people have to sell their homes, and there's no buyers, and so prices move faster. But then the question becomes, okay, what does the Fed do or the government do to try to paper over the problem? And if they come out with, if the Fed takes rates from 2% down to 0%, does another, let's say, $200 billion in quantitative easing, the government does a CARES Act 2.0, that's $10 trillion, let's say, in deficit spending, then all of a sudden, that's going to paper over that problem. And that's where you'd most likely get the price of the home going down in real terms, but maybe going up in nominal terms. So without the government intervention, yes, you're right. The housing market could go down by 50% in, I wouldn't say less than a year, but maybe a year, 2 years, something like that. But with the government intervention, I mean, who knows? How long do you think the sanctions on Russia and trading halts on? Well, the Russian stocks are trading. Last I saw on Friday, they're trading. Now, the ADRs or the pink sheets, whatever they are in the United States, that hold the underlying assets, they're not trading. But the Russian stock exchange, to my knowledge, is opened back up last week. Question, that's what's easiest for me to see. George, did you make a whiteboard video discussing the Bretton Woods system, IMF, World Bank, Bank of International Settlements? Oh, I'm sure I've made a ton of them. I don't know that if I'm going to do one this week. I was going to do one on food shortages and maybe the World Economic Forum, because I think that plays into it. But yeah, I'm sure I've got a bunch on those topics. Have I heard lately the squeeze would kill inflation? Do you agree? Dear George, I've lately heard the squeeze. Huh. I'm not sure what you're referring to. The squeeze would kill inflation. And could you examine the arguments for, well, yeah, I don't know what the squeeze is. I don't know if you're talking about raising rates, like the Fed raising rates. Yeah, I'm not sure what you're referring to there. What interest rate numbers? Again, I'll go back to 2%, because I don't think that's just for the real estate market. I think that's for the stock market. The bond market, in my opinion, is the smart money. So if they're saying 2%, that's kind of my base case. And I think that's kind of when you see things start to deteriorate, the stock market coming down. I think that's really the key component here, because the economy is dependent on the stock market, and then the housing market is really dependent on the levels of employment. So if you see the stock market go down by 50%, the economy crashes, and then the housing market really starts to struggle as a result. And that's looking like the Fed funds at 2%. Oh, liquidity squeeze. Would it kill inflation? Yeah, but I don't know where we're going to get this liquidity squeeze, though. I mean, if you're talking about like repo, corporate debt, I mean, those are very liquid. I don't think they've got any issues there. But yeah, if you had, like, if that's what you're referring to, then Yeah. I mean, you're dealing with a system that's got a lot of systemic risk. There's a lot of contagion risk. And if something breaks and, that's what happened with GFC was a liquidity squeeze, right? The banks just couldn't get the liquidity they needed. And you saw what happened. So that would kill inflation. if we had a GFC 2.0. But again, Adrian, what's the response going to be? And so you could see a deflationary bust in asset prices, most likely stocks, but that followed up by another wave of inflation, consumer price inflation, to be clear. So what is this? Is this a scam, George Gammon? This is not me. 40 big. So, all right. Well, I'm glad this scammer is what this looks like. This person posing as me, talking about Bitcoin bonus, yada, yada. I'm actually glad they did this because it just reminds me to tell you guys to watch out for these scams. This is such a huge problem, guys, and I won't go into the details and bore you to death, but I probably have Adriana work on this an hour or two a day, maybe even more, just deleting scam comments like this for cryptocurrency, Bitcoin. They usually pose as me, George Gammon. But sometimes now they're not even posing as me. They're even using my identity, not my name, but my identity and my pictures and creating other names to try to dupe you into giving them $5,000-$10,000 for their crypto, whatever bullshit. And so just make sure that you're cognizant of this. And when you see these types of comments on my channel, just know that it's not me, that this is, I would never give you a WhatsApp number. I would never contact you directly. I would never DM you. That's just not what I do. So always keep your eyes open for these scammers because they're a huge, huge problem on YouTube and pretty much all social media. So here's another scammer. This Galib Noyes. This is a bot, like a fake person. It says, George Gammon, greetings from here. This is so amazing. I simply sent 0.02 Bitcoin from my wallet. And I really got back 0.06 Bitcoin immediately. That's a scammer. Can CBDCs be programmed to expire at a certain date? Yeah. Yeah, it's just like software. So if you don't, if inflation isn't running hot enough for them, if velocity isn't to the degree to which they would like, they can just say, here's your stimmy check, here's your 2,000 Fed bucks or Fed coins. In your Fed wallet, you've got 2 weeks to spend it before they disappear. They could definitely, definitely do that. All right, guys, we'll go ahead and leave it at that. Do some shout outs. Who do we have here? We've got Shoeshine Petey is in the house. We've got Lisa G, Lorenzo O, Raymond Pillbaum, Jason Dirksen, Silver Liner, Ab, Deeps, JB, ATL, maybe Atlanta, Market Mania, Canada. Hey, buddy. Hey, great whiteboard video you did the other day. Hopefully you got my comment there on the lighting. Glad. Thanks for being on the live stream. We got RR, Tony K, Seymour Rivers, Andrew Lester, Brock Thomas, Unvaxxed, No Mask Ed. We got Vote for Pedro. One of the best movies of all time, if not the best. Nicholas Miller, Trino Nuno, Mitchell Goslin, David Lemmer, KR33P3, R Killer, Legacies, Christopher and Leticia Kirwan, Joe G, Wayne Smith, Nicholas Miller, JV, Jeff Hayslip, High Definition, UFO Nut, Aaron Van Fleet, DQ Winters, Volker Franz, Consider the Logic. We need more of that today for sure. All right, guys, enjoy the rest of your evening. And remember to go check out Rebel Capitalist Live. Those speakers are going to be amazing, and we're going to be adding probably 4, 5, 6 more for Miami, June 24th through the 24th. 24th through the 26th, You can get your tickets at rebelcapitalistlive.com. We'll see you in the next video.
Thank you for listening to the Rebel Capitalist Show. For more content like this, check out the Rebel Capitalist blog at georgegammon.com or go to the George Gammon YouTube channel.